This episode of The Exchange is a rebroadcast. It was taped live this Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Good morning. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM, and this is The Exchange. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez. Today, we have two special guests. During the first segment, Governor Sean Parnell will be discussing the legislative session and answering questions from our listening audience. Governor Parnell has been in office since 2009, and before that, he served as lieutenant governor, worked for ConocoPhillips, and represented the Eagle River area in both the Alaska House and Senate. We'll be talking about oil tax legislation, rural infrastructure, broadband internet, and more. You can call in with your questions for the governor at any time. The number is 581-1888. During our second segment, we'll be featuring an interview with Penelope Goforth, a former Unalaska resident who recently discovered what she's describing as the Lost Aleutian Ledgers. But first, Governor Sean Parnell. Welcome, Governor.
Good morning.
Good morning. The first question we've received focuses on oil development. Right now, Shell is on track to do exploratory drilling in the Chukchi Sea, and communities like Unalaska will need to make significant infrastructure investments to upgrade ports and other community facilities if Arctic drilling goes ahead. Does your office plan on prioritizing these projects?
Well, listen, I am so thankful that Dutch Harbor in Alaska has got these kinds of issues, you know, where you've got economic development and some job potential for the community, as well as a potential revenue down the road for the state. So I think we can count our blessings there, and the answer is, of course, the state government will work with your mayor and your council there to make sure that you've got the infrastructure you need. I'm just so thankful that that the community's got this this opportunity ahead, and of course that's assuming that they get their final permits and their final go ahead, which we hope will be the case from the federal government.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, what is the state doing to sort of, I guess, encourage this right now?
Well, it's been a long for Shell in particular to be able to explore their leases. They bought federal leases, gosh, about 6 years ago. And they've poured something approaching $4 billion and have yet to be able to go forward with any activity. And so the federal government's permitting process has been so delayed across time that it's been a huge problem. The same air permit that takes a company several months to get in the Gulf of Mexico took 5 years in Alaska for this. And that's just ridiculous from an economic opportunity standpoint and a job standpoint here in Alaska. So as a state, we have fought to get more timely decision-making out of the federal government and just trying to build our own economy here. So I'm thankful that Shell appears to be on track for this this coming summer, and I'm just thankful too that your community there is going to be able to benefit from that.
Great. And so I guess this has to do more with the overall tax structure related to energy out here. This Friday, the Senate plans to introduce their oil tax bill, legislation which resulted in an impasse during the last session. Are there any compromise measures that you're sort of looking for right now that you would be willing to accept to resolve this issue?
Well, let me talk to your listeners a little bit about kind of the big picture. And you mentioned infrastructure earlier, but the state has to have dollars to be able to fund infrastructure, and 90% of our state dollars come from oil taxes and royalties. That's a real problem when we've got declining oil production on the North Slope, because that means that our money supply, both in the public sector as well as private sector job opportunities, are declining with oil. So instead of 2 million barrels a day like we used to send through the pipeline 20 years ago, we've got something around 600,000 a day, and it's dropping by 7 or 8% a year. So the issue is really how to incentivize new production, how to get more oil into that pipeline. And so when we talk about tax reform has to be meaningful enough to incentivize new production and to bring more dollars here. I can tell you that with HB 110, the House bill that I introduced, the companies have pledged at least $5 billion more in investment in the next 3 years in those fields. And that's just two companies out of the 15 to 20 that do business with the state on the North Slope. So what I'm looking for from the Senate when they come forward with their proposal this week is I'm going to be asking them how much in new dollars and new production will this measure bring? And, you know, if it brings at least $5 billion or more, then I'd say they've got a plan that's worth looking at. And if they don't, then it's going to be simply a giveaway. And I'm not in this to give money away. I'm in this to incentivize new production and bring new opportunity for Alaskans.
And the $5 billion you mentioned, are those hard assurances?
They are. They're public assurances from both BP and from ConocoPhillips. I've not heard companies make those kinds of assurances before. And that's something that I think Alaskans, including us elected leaders, will hold companies accountable for.
And we just received another question. This person wants to know, what about diversification so we don't end up in this situation in 30 years all over again?
That's a significant issue as well. And I can assure you that the state has incentivized investment across the board, whether it's in our travel industry, whether it's in our mineral resources. As you know, Alaska, as a resource state, when we became a state in the late 50s, the federal government said we could use our natural resources to build our economy, and we're doing that. We've got a lot of opportunities for small businesses, low-cost financing that the state is making available. Our fishing industry is something that we're making sure is sustainable across time. So the answer is absolutely. We are a diverse economy, and we can be more diverse across time. The reality is that 90% of our state revenue currently comes from oil, taxes, and royalties, and we want to make sure that that sector is healthy as well.
Mm-hmm. And I guess just as a follow-up to that, you mentioned the fishing industry. I mean, is there anything in particular that your office or the legislature is planning on doing this session in particular that you think would help benefit fishing communities like this one?
Yeah, we are. We're actually funding more research of our fisheries. We're also fighting to make sure that the Endangered Species Act is not used to shut down our fisheries as it has been in the past. So from a legal perspective, we're taking action to challenge federal overreach in that area. So the answer is absolutely yes.
And does that mean that you all may potentially appeal the recent Stellar Sea Lion decision that passed through the courts?
As I understand, the Department of Law is looking at that issue and reviewing whether or not we have that option, but I've not been briefed by them yet, so I cannot say. But you can be assured that if we have the opportunity to fight for Alaska's fishermen, that we'll do so.
And I guess back to our oil tax structure, you've indicated that you would consider separating oil and gas taxes to get oil tax reform through this time, a measure that was recommended by an outside analysis commissioned by the state. Previously, you had voted against legislation that would allow this sort of decoupling. I guess what's changed your thinking about this?
Well, previously, I vetoed decoupling legislation because the way it was structured, when they decoupled oil taxes from gas taxes, it was an increase to oil taxes. I'm not in this to increase taxes. I think that actually drives our economy further into the ground. And so what I've said is if a decoupling measure comes forward that doesn't increase oil taxes or gas taxes, in other words, it's a neutral measure, but it does separate oil taxes from gas taxes, that's something that would be different than what was presented to me before and something that I would favorably consider.
Okay. And on a similar note, you mentioned the decline that we're seeing in oil production on the North Slope. You said we've gone down from 2 million barrels a day to 600,000. This week, it's sort of been in the news that the Department of Natural Resources is considering changing its mission, getting rid of language that focuses on conservation and instead focusing on language that focuses on maximum benefit for Alaskans. Can you tell me a little bit about your thinking behind this?
Absolutely. I am focused on making sure that our agencies are grounded on our Constitution. And so what Department of Natural Resources has done is rewritten their mission statement to reflect Article 8, Section 1 of our Constitution, which is the Natural Resources section. And that section says that we will responsibly develop our resources for the maximum benefit of Alaskans, consistent with the public interest. And the rest of Article 8, that's the overarching policy statement of the Natural Resources section of our Constitution. DNR is grounding itself on that policy statement. Now, beneath that policy statement in our Constitution, Article 8 speaks to utilization, development, conservation, common use, access to our resources. I mean, it defines what is consistent with the public interest, but we can't include, you know, all of those elements in a statement or a mission statement unless you just restate Article 8, Section 1, which is what Department of Natural Resources is trying to do. So I think Alaskans can take some comfort that we've got a governor, we've got a department that wants to found its mission statement on the Constitution, knowing that all of those other elements are part of our policy that are consistent with the public interest, elements of conservation, elements of utilization, elements of development, access, common use of our resources. But those are all expressed in that overarching policy statement of Article 8, Section 1, which DNR has put forward as their mission statement. I actually find it kind of humorous that legislators, a few of them, don't think that we should be founding our DNR mission statement on the mission statement in the Constitution.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly with more questions for Governor Sean Parnell. Welcome back to The Exchange. Our guest today is Governor Sean Parnell, and we've just been discussing the state's oil tax regime.
I guess just continuing on, we have a question about internet use in rural areas. What is your office currently doing to get broadband to Alaskans off the road system, and what kind of progress is the Alaska Broadband Task Force making right now?
We actually advocated for a larger dose of broadband funds from the federal government, and I know that we've got companies in Alaska that scored some federal grants for expansion of broadband in Alaska. Clearly, broadband is infrastructure for all Alaskans, but especially in rural Alaska. So I understand the importance of it and have been very supportive of broadband expansion. Trying to get better access and fighting for our rural communities, this last fall, I ended up calling and speaking with virtually every member of the Federal Communications Commission when they were making decisions related to access charges for phones in rural America, including rural Alaska. So been right at the forefront of making sure that Alaskans have access not only to broadband, but to lower-cost telecommunication services.
This question comes from a local educator out in our community. Right now, the Senate is considering changing the base student allocation formula to include a funding increase, which you previously expressed opposition to. This educator wants to know that in order to plan budgets ahead of time, schools need to have a clearer idea of how much funding they have available to them. Would you reconsider your stance on education to increase the BSA so that schools would be better able to plan their budgets?
Well, first, I agree that we don't want our districts to have to pink slip teachers and then pull them back. That was a practice for many years. And our administration once again proposed forward funding education, which we did this year as well as last year. So they have some certainty about that level of funding. The base student allocation is an automatic formula increase education funding, and I really wanted to draw a line in the sand and say we need to have a discussion about whether we should automatically increase education funding without any real scrutiny by the legislature, or whether the legislature should consider some of the fixed costs and write a separate check for those. So for me, it's not about whether or not education funding should increase. I think this year it should, because we have some increased heating costs, for example, across the state. That's somewhere in the neighborhood of $9 to $11 million, as I understand it at this point. We're getting final numbers finalized on that. And the bottom line is whether we should build in automatic increases to our budget when Europe is facing a meltdown, when our own nation is succumbing to its spending addiction and debt crisis, and it looks like we have a very uncertain economic future ahead. But the idea is we shouldn't build automatic increases into our statutes. Instead, we should be focusing on putting our resources where they're needed year by year. And in this case, if heating costs go up, I say let's write a check for those once those heating costs are demonstrated. If utility costs go up, let's write a check for those. But these automatic increases are exactly what got the federal government into trouble. They're exactly why we're in the debt we're in on a federal basis. And I'm just drawing a line and saying we ought to address real costs rather than building in automatic spending increases.
Mm-hmm.
That's a discussion we'll have with the legislature, and we are having.
Of course. And I guess as a follow-up to that, but right now we currently have a surplus with our budget. How are you factoring this in?
That's exactly what I'm factoring in, is that with the surpluses we have to be very very prudent and responsible. Our budget is built on $96.50 a barrel oil. I was in the legislature in 1999 when oil was at $9 a barrel. You know, just a few years back, it was in the $60 and $70 range. So we could easily need to draw on our savings to the tune of several billion dollars in a year just to get us through. And because our state budget is so dependent upon volatile oil prices, it's easy to think we should spend all of our savings now rather than save it for when oil prices go down. But we know that oil prices go up and oil prices go down. We have a very healthy capital budget proposed. We have, I've already said I would support increases to education where those cost increases are real, like, for example, heating costs. So I just think we need to be responsible with our spending, and I'm asking legislators to join me in that.
All right. And right now we have time for maybe one or two more questions.
Okay.
So this question has to do with coastal zone management. Yesterday, mm-hmm. Juneau Mayor Bruce Patello testified in front of a legislative committee that the cost estimate provided by the Office of Management and Budget of CZM was significantly inflated. If the program were, in fact, less expensive, would you support that?
Well, first, I think you should know that because this is an initiative, I cannot use any state resources to advocate for an initiative or to oppose an initiative. So my hands are tied by the law in terms of I can't tell you what I would support or wouldn't support when it comes to the initiative. I can tell you that last year in the legislature, when there was legislation before us, it was my administration that actually submitted legislation to extend the sunset on the Coastal Zone Management Program. We also spent hundreds of hours negotiating a piece of legislation that resulted in a 40-0 vote, a wide bipartisan vote, you know, a very supportive vote from every member of the Alaska House of Representatives. When that bill got to the state Senate, it became the more extreme measures took over, and it became more lopsided and didn't factor in all the stakeholders' interests, and it fell apart at that point. Then the initiative rose up, and I am my hands are tied by law that I cannot support or oppose an initiative with state assets. So it would be improper for me to comment on the question you asked.
Okay, of course.
Okay.
Well, I guess we just have about a minute left. Is there anything else that you would like to add today, Governor Parnell?
Well, I just want to tell the Aleutian communities that I am thinking about you. I had a conversation with Mayor Shirley within the last week, and I know that we've worked together well on garnering support for that wastewater treatment plant there. I also know you've experienced a severe winter, and much of Alaska has, and my hope and prayer is that spring is coming soon, and I know that our Aleutian Alaskans certainly join in that too. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and with your listeners.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Governor Parnell. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
We'll be back shortly with an interview with Penelope Goforth.